At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
It's the Son of a Butch podcast. I'm your host, Claude Harmon. You guys know the drill. We come to you every Wednesday. After last week's podcast with Pat Perez, if you haven't checked that out, go check it out. I figured we would dive into deep into instruction. So if this is for all the instructors out there, if you're working on your game, Jamie McConnell, he is the director of instruction at my academy out in Dubai. I was paying him a visit last week, as I do every year. And this guy is easily one of the smartest people that I know in golf instruction. And it was really, really good to get an opportunity to sit down and talk to him and kind of get his views on how he got into instruction, how he works, and the stuff that he's doing. Because as I say in the podcast, he's a huge, huge part of my team, but he's also been a huge mentor for me because I learned so much from other instructors. And that's the cool thing, I think, about what I get to do is I get to spend time with so many great people that are giving lessons around the world and get their ideas and get their views. And a lot of those ideas I take and use in my own teaching. And Jamie is somebody that he's a friend, he's a confidant, but he's also someone that I bounce ideas off of a couple times, you know, 2-3 times a year. I'll be working with a player. I've done this before with him with DJ. I've done this before with Brooks, with Pat Perez, with all the players, Siwoo Kim, that I've worked with in the past. And sometimes I'll just send Jamie a video and say, listen, give me a fresh set of eyes on this. We're trying to get this player to do X. And, you know, when you are working in golf and as a player, when you're working with a player and you're a coach, sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees because you're so involved in it. And Jamie is somebody that I will send video to of a player and say, listen, give me your 2 cents on this. Tell me what you think about this. And he always has kind of a different approach. And a lot of times it'll send me down a path that I didn't really even think that I was going to go down and hadn't even thought of. So I'm really excited. If you don't know, a lot of people don't know who Jamie is. I'm really excited for everybody to get to know his story and listen to him talk. So let's get straight to the interview. Jamie, how long? I can't even think of how long you've been here in Dubai at the academy. What's it been?
It's going into my 10th year. I'm just about to renew my visa for the fourth time here. So, yeah, almost a decade.
It's amazing. Your journey to golf instruction, I mean, obviously, for everyone listening to the podcast, I mean, everybody knows, you know, who people like my dad are and people who, you know, David Ledbetter, Sean Foley. But I always, you know, they do these instructor lists every year in America. Top Golf Digest does the top 50. Golf Magazine does the top 100 and stuff. And, you know, those of us that have been lucky enough, I've been lucky enough to be on those lists. Largely, I think a lot of that's a popularity contest. Largely, I think a lot of that sometimes is people's work with tour players. There are so many great instructors around the world. I'm biased, obviously, because you run our academy here in Dubai, but I think you're one of the best golf instructors in the world. I mean, I learn as much from you and have learned as much from you in the last, say, 10 years as I've learned from anybody. But your journey to golf instruction, I always think it's interesting to find out why and how people become and choose instruction as their profession, as their career. You played, you tried to play?
I did a very bad job of playing. I did attempt to play for 3 years. I turned pro on my 18th birthday. Up to that point, I had a fairly average amateur career, I would say. I think I very much underestimated how many good players was out there, probably because of exposure. I hadn't really played to the level that really a Rory McIlroy or somebody would have as an amateur. So I didn't really
because
see.
I think the difference in the U.S. Versus, you know, a country like you grew up in Ireland is in the U.S., if you're playing, you're going to play junior golf, then you're going to play high school golf. If you want to keep going there, then you're going to try and play some level of college golf, whether it's a D1, D2, whatever level, junior college, and then you try and then play. I don't think a lot of people in the U.S. will realize that the avenue, if you want to try and do that in the UK and Ireland and Scotland, places like that, there was no high school golf for you. You're either in a county team, then hopefully one day you get into the national team. But there's no real kind of organized team way to do it as we see in the US, right? So you just basically, as an 18-year-old, you're playing a bunch of golf and you say, all right, I'm going to turn pro. So you turn pro at 18. What does that mean?
Yeah, well, up to that point, I suppose the biggest thing I had won was actually your dad's tournament, the Red Bull Masterclass.
There you go.
I had coaching off him and your three uncles at that point.
And
it was at Druids Heath.
Druids Heath?
Yeah, it was Druids Heath. I think Portmarnock was the first year, and then Druids Heath was the second.
Yeah, and then one year I was living in Scotland, and we went down to, he and the brothers did one in at Celtic Manor.
Yeah.
And they went down and did that one.
Yeah. But
funny, my dad and his brothers used to go over and do those classes to where they would get a bunch of kids like yourself. And, you know, obviously if you're going to places in Wales, if you're going to places in Scotland, if you're going anywhere in the UK, you know, my uncle Billy, my dad's youngest brother, who I've had on the podcast before, he loved it because he said, listen, it's raining sideways, but the kids, they don't know any different. They've got to hit golf balls. We didn't have any inside stuff. So they're hitting balls in the rain. They're hitting balls where it's raining sideways. It's no sun and stuff. So you go to the Red Bull. You go to Red Bull?
Red Bull Masterclass, it was called. Yeah. So we had a couple of days of instruction and then a tournament. And like, from winning that, I thought...
How old were you?
I was probably 16.
16.
And it was a strong feel. Like, there were some really good players. There was a couple of guys who played Walker Cup. And I was like, I was over the moon. And I remember... they always picked one person from the guys and the girls at the end. And I had won the tournament, and I was like, great, I'm going to get picked, going to go to Vegas, going to get to work with Butch. I was like, all happy, and they didn't pick me. And I could never understand. I had such a grudge for so long until I started working here. And then I remember they picked Craig Drugan, and Craig bombed it around this golf course. He hit it all over the place. Bombed it around the course while I like one-ironed my way to a win. And until I kind of started working for you guys, I then realized like what they seen from me was probably... I was squeezing every last bit of score out of whatever limited talent I had. And then they see someone like Craig, who just had so much speed and power. And they're like, okay, I can make him better. I can't make that guy better. I think that's what, from working for you guys, I'm like, okay, I can see now why you would pick somebody else. Because like when I see the standard now, with the kids coming through, you can see like raw materials, raw goods. But like the worst thing you can have is an absolute polished 17-year-old who's just shooting under par. Whereas if you get a guy who's shooting like 62 and then 82, you're like, okay, I can make that tidier. But you can't get the other guy. You can't give him a Ferrari engine if he's got a Fiat in the back of it. So, yeah, I think that was the thing that stood out to me.
You turn pro, you play for a little while, but like a lot of people that have aspirations to play, you quickly realize how good the standard is, how good you actually really have to be, and so it's. Then that you decide to become a golf instructor?
Yeah, well, I ran out of cash. I had gone 3 years. In my third year, the debt started to clock up quite heavily. I thought about it.
Yeah, that's in the age of, not to try and turn this into talking about live, because that's all anybody wants to talk about, but there's, you know, when we look at people that are trying to play golf, and Pat Perez and I talked about this, is for some reason in golf, running out of money and trying to play and realizing that, okay, in order for me to keep playing and keep chasing my dream, I have to find money. I have to find backing. And for some reason in golf, that's become normalized. And for some reason in golf, it's romantic, evidently. It's romantic to have to go and work 15 jobs and all this stuff. And there are so many stories like that. Sujan Singh, who works for us here in Dubai at the Academy. Sujan played the Asian Tour, had some success. He said, listen, he came over and walked around some practice rounds with me at the Saudi International a couple weeks ago. He was over there with Honor Bon Lahiri. And he's like, man, I just miss this so much. I miss being in competitive tournament golf so much. And Pat Perez, you know, and DJ said to him, well, why aren't you still playing? And he said, well, I just ran out of money.
Yeah.
You know, now there is the argument to be made that, okay, the better you play, the more money you're going to make. But when you're first starting out, it's expensive. And you get to a point where you say, listen, I just financially, unless you have wealthy parents, unless you have a backer, you just can't afford to keep playing. And I'm sure in Ireland and Scotland and the UK and all over the world, there are loads of young kids that had aspirations. They wanted to play. They couldn't afford to continue to try and be a competitive golfer.
Yeah, and literally that's what it was. There was four of us, you know, traveling around and playing together, and we all basically had the same kind of time limit. We all kind of ran out of cash or ran into too much debt at the same time, and yeah, we all had to go and do something to maintain it for another year, and that's pretty much what I'd done. So I turned to doing my PGA so I could teach a bit, and I could work in a golf club, and I could do all that, and that was kind of the start of, you know, me moving on from playing. You know, after 1 year of that, you quickly realize, like, I'm not good enough. Like, there is a point where you've got to call it quits. And for me, I was looking around at some of the guys that I was playing against, and I was just like, I'm nowhere near them.
What year would this have been?
So that would have been, oh God, probably about 14 years ago. So, yeah, but 2008.
Which is when we started the, Justin Parsons and I, JP and I, we started the academy here. JP came to work for me. I lived in Dubai here for 3 years, 2008 to 2011. I left in May of 2011. You got hired by Justin Parsons, and I remember JP, who I've had on the podcast before. He now works at Sea Island. He's doing an unbelievable job working with Harris English, Brian Harman, Brandon Grace, Louis Oosthuizen, and I think Justin's become one of the elite tour coaches on the planet. But you're talking about how you ran out of money, you had no money. One of the reasons when JP said he was going to hire you, he called me and I was in the States. I said, you know, what do you like about this kid, Jamie? And he goes, well, he bought his own TrackMan. So you buy a TrackMan in what year?
I bought it, it was not long after that. So I'd actually bought, the only way I could get it was I had to take out a bank loan. But I couldn't get any bank loans. The only loan I could get was a car loan.
JP told me, this kid's broke. He literally has no money. And in 2009, 2008, yeah, you buy a TrackMan. For those of you listening, we see TrackMans, we see launch monitors on the road. But TrackMan, really, the orange box, it was the first real TrackMan to come out. For those of you that don't know, TrackMans cost 30 grand. It's basically like buying a car. So we see these on the range now. We see everybody have these launch monitors and stuff. These things cost $30,000. It's the equivalent of buying a car. You're broke. Why did you say to yourself, okay, I'm going to take out a bank loan and buy a TrackMan?
Like, I'd started teaching a lot, and I was really enjoying it, but wanted to know more about it. And there was some kind of social media guys starting to use it and started to see it. And I was like, there's nobody using this. And I looked at, I actually did a Google at the time, looked in Ireland, and I'm like, there's 8 TrackMan in Ireland, all TrackMan 2 units. TrackMan 3 had just come out.
So at that point, really, the only people that are using them on a regular basis are the club manufacturers and fitters and professional golfers. Even at that point, not all professionals had
them. There was very few. There's hardly any professional golfers using them. Yeah. It was mainly fitters. So out of all the TrackMan in Ireland, they were all fitters. So I thought, well, I could get this. It'll help me figure out a little bit more, help out my students. I thought there was some cool things you could do in terms of like performance stuff as well. And yeah, I just decided I'd get a €22,000 car loan, and I spent €21,000 on a TrackMan and €1,000 on a car, which the bank didn't find out. So just to add to that, it was an interesting way.
So let me make sure I've got the story right, because I've never really asked you this, but JP told me. So then you decide, all right, I'm going to take this TrackMan because nobody's got one in Ireland, really, from an instruction standpoint, and I'm going to basically become a mobile TrackMan service that travels around Ireland to golf courses, to clubs, and try and use that technology from instruction and offer your services. You've paid the €21,000 for it, and so you're charging what to use it?
Well, what we started...
Let me tell you. I can tell you right now, This does not sound like a money-making venture.
No, it was not. It was enough to survive. Like, all I knew at the time was I did not want to work in a pro shop. I wanted to teach. So anything that got me closer to teaching and doing more hours on instruction and I could live off was enough. So I think at the time, I think we were charging about 200, 250 euros a day. And I said to the guy, I basically said, because again, people didn't know that much about it. So I said to them, look, if you have a shop, you can fit with this. If you want to teach with it, I'll be there as either a consultant, or I'll help you teach with it, or I'll happily just go and have a coffee and you can use it. Whatever one you'd want to do. And I'd done the TrackMan Master Certificate very early, so I think it was the first in the UK and Ireland to have it. And I just basically started messaging pros that I knew. I set up a Facebook page called the TrackMan Roadshow. TrackMan Roadshow. And I just started asking guys, I'm like, look, do you want to try it? I'm like, fill the day or do a half day. And I just started with like little bits here and there. And by the time I'd left for here, we were up to 26 days a month, just traveling around. And that was in the space of about 7-8 months.
And then you make the decision to write, fund, and publish your own book on how to use a TrackMan. And again, we're in 2022. This information now for all the instructors and all the people that are golf nerds listening, this is all readily available now. You can go online. There's, you know, 1,000. You can find, I mean, if you searched, you know, TrackMan usage or anything in YouTube right now, you can find tons of videos. It's part, launch monitor technology now is part of what we do as instructors. It's part of golf. So you write a book, right?
Yeah, well, what I wanted to do is write TrackMan for Dummies, but I got copyright on that. So I had to change it. So I just called it TrackMan, Understanding the Numbers. It's very short. It's like 50 pages.
50 pages. But again, this is in 2000 and...
Yeah, probably 2009, 2010, somewhere in that. Started with just... what I wanted to do is put like simple applications to it. So like you could get the descriptions of what like face angle and path were, but it was just like how to actually use them in instruction and how to... Just the basics of understanding. Like if you said it to a 15-year-old kid, could they understand it? And could they understand how to work it? And yeah, I thought it was a good way of getting publicity. It was at the time, again, you said I wasn't making a lot of money. So like even if I'm getting $50, $100 a month, it's like, okay, there's another $50, $100 a month to help me survive and live and pay bills and travel around the country with my little orange box. And it was funny because
Did you have TrackMan Roadshow on the car? For everyone listening that lives in the UK,
did you get the
sponsored car and put the thing on the side that says Jamie McConnell?
I did have the money.
Roadshow.
I wish I had the money to do that at this stage. I was just trying to get around. We'd done that for seven months and it was flying. It was doing really well. And I remember TrackMan hating me because they couldn't sell any units. Because when I was going around the country, people were like, why would I spend 22,000 euros on a TrackMan? I can get this guy.
Get the roadshow.
Yeah. And I was at that point looking at buying a second one. I was very close to getting a second one and being able to just hand one to certain people who knew how to use it, let them have it for 2-3 days, and then I was going to go with the other one to the people who didn't and start to kind of leverage it a little bit. But that was just before I had come out here. Yeah.
So let's take a quick break to thank our partner for wellness. You guys have heard me talk about it. I'm a big fan of their coffee, big fan of the good stuff. I put it in my coffee on a regular basis. The thing I like about it, no sugars, no artificial sweeteners. It's gotten me off dairy. I've quit putting sweeteners, sugars in, just the good stuff. I also put a scoop of that in my coffee, but I also put it in smoothies and take it on the road with me. And the other thing that I've been using are their energy bites. I keep them with me on the golf course. A lot of times when I'm out on tour, I don't have a lot of time to sit and eat. So these energy bites, a little coffee hit, a little bit of energy, all the good stuff, all natural. And if you haven't given those a try, check those out. They've given me a special code to share with Son of a Butch listeners. You can get 20% off your order, plus free shipping and a free starter kit worth $30 for a limited time when you visit forwellness.com/podcast. That's spelled forwellness.com/podcast. And enter the code CH3 at checkout. It's their best offer right now, so give it a try. They even back every purchase with a 60-day money-back guaranteed. That's, again, the code CH3 at forwellness.com/podcast. All right, let's get back to the interview.
You know, the thing I find interesting now, you know, we cut to almost a, you know, over a decade later. When I watch you teach, when I come over here and when we talk, I mean, you and I talk, you're running the academy here. I mean, there's weeks where you and I talk daily. Doesn't go longer than maybe 2 or 3 days where you and I don't talk on the phone. When we talk about instruction, when we talk about that, I find it interesting when I watch you teach now, you would think after that background, after all the stuff that you went through to kind of be an early adopter of the technology of teaching and using launch monitors for something other than instruction, right? I only ever see you pull out a launch monitor for something very, very specific, to look at something specific, and it's never for you, right? At this point, you know, when I watch you teach now, the launch monitor data, yeah, every now and again you'll say, hey, let me see what this player does and get an idea of what they do, right? But you and I have talked, and I say this in seminars that I give all the time. If you're an instructor listening to this podcast and you need a launch monitor to tell you what a player is doing, you need to get a new job. You need to find another profession, because if you need a $30,000 piece of technology to tell you that the path is left and the face is right, or the path is right and the face is left, if someone's got a giant slice, the numbers I think you use now and the data that you use now is to make your, not make your case, but to say to the player, listen, this is what you're doing. It's not me guessing. This is what you're doing, and this is how to fix it. But I'm always taken aback by you. You probably are one of the best that I've ever met from an instructor. You adopt all the technology. You know how to use SAM. You know how to use Capto. You know how to use all of this technology. But I don't really see you use it as much as I would think, right? It's not like every single lesson you give is, from a full swing standpoint, is looking at data. Not every single putting lesson you give is using technology. So there is this constant, I think, for the instructors and for the golf junkies out there listening, this balance of data versus real world. You know, Carl Morris, the sports psychologist, golf, you know, I've been on his podcast. You've done a lot of work with him. He does great work in the UK working with players. He works with a lot of tour players. It was Phil Kenyon. We were in Saudi a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the subject. Phil and I were just sitting having breakfast. And, you know, Phil said, you know, we're talking about data and information. And Phil said something, and it just blew me away. He said, yeah, you know, that's an example of information-rich data. I mean, information-rich, knowledge-poor. And I said, Bill, that's unbelievable. I'm gonna give you full credit when I use that. And he said, I didn't say that. Dr. Carl Morris said that. And I think we are at a stage in instruction now to where we are data rich, information rich, but knowledge poor in how to apply that. So how have you over the last decade said, okay, we have all of this technology that can tell us all of the stuff about what players are doing. We no longer have to guess. We no longer have to do any of this stuff. But how do we use this information and use the technology to help players get better?
I think I've kind of had a habit of using it in reverse. And I remember doing a presentation on TrackMan, and I called it TrackMan without the numbers. So, like, I love, like, the picture of the range down the line and just having the dead straight ball, the target line. Because, like, I'll tell people to stand up and right. You have to start at right of that and curve left. And, like, if they're slicing it to begin and then they start to do that, and I'll go, well, here's your path to begin, here's your path at the end. So instead of going numbers to picture, you're going picture and then unhiding the numbers. And it means that, like, they actually start to get something they can feel, use, and understand. And, like, to me, that's the way it should be used. It shouldn't be just like point out the data. It should be like change it and then go, okay, it was here and now it's here. Here's the understanding. But they immediately have the feel of what to do rather than the information, because the information is useless. And I think it always goes back to, like, Justin used to hammer me on this, and he'd come into the office, and I think it was your dad saying, it was like, don't teach what you can't use on the back nine on Sunday. And it's like, you don't have a TrackMan on the back nine on Sunday. You don't have a SAM. And, like, they're huge. They're great pieces of technology, but if you're standing there, you know, on the last tee and you've got to hit a draw, doesn't matter what information you've got to be able to hit a drop. You know what I mean? And that was the one thing that always stood out. And he used to just absolutely obliterate us on this all the time. And even watching you and your dad teach, like, there's never anything complicated. Like Tom, who's working for us now, our fitness trainer, you know, he even said, watching you in a lesson, he just came in with this shook look on his face. I'm like, are you okay? He's like, it's just so easy. I'm like, what do you mean it's so easy? He goes, he just makes it look so easy. It was so simple. And, you know, I always say to you, like, the best lesson I ever seen you give was some 85-year-old guy in Floridian. And you had, like, you had the biggest chicken wing you've ever seen. You had videoed him, not shown him. You put you'd put dynamic loft on the screen, and it was, like, 55 degrees. And you were like, get that down to 30. And you just kept saying, yeah, no, yeah. And by the end of it, he's got the straightest left arm you've ever seen.
The impact changed.
Yeah. And again, it's in
the impact changed and the numbers changed. Yeah.
And that was 6 years ago. And that lesson to me always stands out. I'm like, you changed it by saying very, very little. But you changed it in a huge way. And he understood it. He's like, oh, if the loft does this, my arm does this.
And he felt it.
Yeah, he knew it. He knew it before he'd even seen the change. He could see the ball flight. And he could feel it. And he knew what he was doing. It didn't matter what the picture looked like. But then he goes, oh. And the picture, like you say, helps him buy into it. It helps him go, oh, okay, you're 100% right there. You know what I mean? There's never a doubt. It's like, that was easy. It's like, I've just got to get it delivered this way.
Based on where you started, you know, your instruction journey and where you are now, how do you feel like you've evolved and changed? You know, if you could go back and look at the lessons, I say this all the time, if I could go back and find the people that I gave lessons to when I was working at my dad's golf school in Vegas and Tiger's there and all the best players in the world are there, I'd give them their money back because I didn't know shit. I didn't know anything. I just kind of knew what my dad said. I knew what some other people said. I had no real world kind of practical application. I was under my dad's umbrella. You know, I didn't know anything. How is your journey from when you've started, when you look at what you were teaching and trying to help players with 10 years ago, 5 years ago, how has that evolved? And I think for the instructors and the golf junkies listening, there has to be an evolution. You shouldn't know everything when you start, right? But how is your journey? You can't know everything, right? How is your journey? How do you teach differently now than you taught maybe 10, 12 years ago?
I think I'm comfortable with saying less. And if Justin's listened to this, he'll have a chuckle at this. Like, literally, almost every lesson.
Because he used to tell me that if Jamie could just quit talking, right? If Jamie could just learn how to quit talking, because he's trying so hard to give all of this information that he's got in his head, which is all amazing, fantastic information.
Yeah, but it's too much.
But it's too much.
Yeah. And it's. I think the other thing, as you give more lessons, and you just keep going back to the simple stuff. Like, we had a kid in yesterday, really good kid, shot a decent score at the weekend, super strong grip, way behind it. And I, you know, I said to him, when was the last time you worked on your grip? He's like, not like a year and a half ago. He's 5-knuckle left hand grip. And I said, weaken your left hand and punch
it. 5 knuckles and an elbow on the left hand, right hand super under the club.
And I think the big difference with that is now I'm comfortable. I know from doing 2,000 golf lessons a year for the last 10 years, I know if I fix his grip and get him to punch it, he's going to deliver perfectly. Whereas 10 years ago, it's like, okay, you're not even convinced yourself that this will have such a big effect. So you kind of almost compensate by talking. And you're trying to convince them you're smart. And like, people look at it now and go, is that it? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, look. And they're like, oh, that's all I have to do. Yeah. And it's getting comfortable with giving less. I think that's the biggest difference for me. If I look back where I was, like, I knew a lot of the information. I thought I knew everything. I thought I had 10% to learn. Now I'm like, I think I've got 90% to learn. But it's funny, like, in 10 years, you just get used to giving less. And a lot of lessons become repetitive, but that's not a bad thing. You know, if you had everybody in a good grip, posture, setup, takeaway, chances are they're going to hit it better. Like, there's not many people that walk in with a perfect grip posture.
Yeah, so many of the average golfers, and when I say this all the time, you know, I'm lucky to live in two worlds. I live in the tour world. I've been lucky enough to work with, you know, some amazing players who I've learned a tremendous amount from, and that's, you know, I think largely, you know, probably one of the differences between, you know, the people listening to this podcast is they know who I am because of the players I've worked with, and they don't know who you are because they haven't heard your name on TV, they haven't seen you on a driving range or anything like that. But very rarely for the average golfer, to me, average golfers are people that you're not seeing on TV. The amount day in and day out that we see a 15 handicapper come in who has got a good grip, who sets up to the golf ball well, properly, who has good ball position, right? The basic fundamentals, grip, stance, posture, alignment. The stuff in 2022 that is so not the norm, right? It's so not the rage right now. It's not sexy. It's not cool. It's not the new thing. It's not the lay it down and all that bullshit, right? So many golfers, like you said, could improve so much by just spending 6 months on having a consistent, good grip. I wouldn't say neutral, but I always say when I look at golf swings and setups, I think so many golfers and so many people listening to the podcast, they have something in their setup from ball position, alignment, posture, or grip that is extreme. It is out of the norm, right? It is not normal for what a good player does. Obviously, there have been great players, David Duval, four knuckles and an elbow, Jose Mariel, Thobel, weak grip. There are outliers, right? But I think it's interesting that you say that, if everyone listening would just improve the obvious things that you do before you hit a golf ball. You know, we always talk about, and you and I have talked about this a lot, a long time, the grip, the posture, the setup, the alignment is the same thing that players that play golf on a regular basis don't do well. And then that domino effect, they have something extreme in their grip. They have something extreme in their posture. They have something extreme in the ball position. That from there, it's almost an accident or just dumb luck if they somehow match it up and hit a good shot. And that's why so many players, Jamie, come to us and say, listen, I'm hitting it so bad, and we've talked about this. The average person listening to the podcast that plays golf on a regular basis, they're more surprised by the good shots than they are by the bad shots, right? And they can't repeat the good shot. And so it's interesting that you said that having the basics done makes the rest of what you're trying to do more attainable.
Yeah. And I always use the example of, like, if you look at the top 10 players in the world, they've all got very different swings, very different characteristics based on how their body's moving. You know, you see things, you hear the stories of, like, John Rahm with his foot as a child, and obviously you're not going to get everybody to swing it the same.
You know, JT, Justin Thomas, is a bit of a throwback.
Yeah.
You know, we don't see a lot of players with that backswing being super, super vertical, that left arm plane, the high hands. The modern golf swing is much, I would say, more rounded and flatter than the way JT swings the golf club. You know, Jordan Spieth's grip. You know, when Jordan Spieth came on the scene and started to play, you know, professionally, I think a lot of people in golf instruction watched him, you know, tour players, tour coaches were like, yeah, I mean, the kid's got to change that grip to be able to compete. And he hasn't changed any of it.
And I think the thing is, you know, don't look for those nuances that they have. Look for the commonalities. They all stand to it good. They all set the ball position good. Their posture is generally all good. You know,
I don't think there's many of the modern players now, as I think as the modern golfer has become taller. You know, I think most of the players that we're starting to see, you see this in players that are starting to play, that want to play competitively, they're bigger than they were 10, 15 years ago. They're taller. You know, a lot of the juniors that we're seeing now that are choosing golf as the pathway, they're over 6 feet tall, right? And so the posture changes now. You just, like you said, the top 10 players in the world, their postures are pretty good. You know, everybody sees on Instagram these positions to where, you know, every year, you know, every so often they cycle through, you know, all the different positions that players get into at the top. But like you said, at address, ball position wise and setup wise, the things that they do before they hit the golf ball tend to be, they'd all look the same.
Very common. Very, very common. And I think that's what, not only like players, but I think coaches need to do that for longer too. Because like coaches tend to jump around a lot. We get people into the academy and, you know, if I know they've had lessons with somebody else, I'll say, oh, what's the theme been of your lessons? As in assuming they've worked on one thing for a period of time. And they'll go, well, I did grip, and then I did posture, and then I did release, and then I did this, and then it was reverse spine, and then I was trying to get more. And I'm like, how many lessons? And they're like, oh, like six. And you're kind of like, how are you meant to get any of that? And then they set up to it poorly, and you're like, all right, grip, posture, setup. If you start from there, you have a better chance of doing everything else right. But you're not going to do this in a day or a week. Like, this should be your plan for the next month, 2 months, 3 months, depending on what it is. And you'll see people want to move a certain way because of their body. So, like, if their body's always moving that way, they will have to constantly work at that. Like, you look at Tiger, he was always, you know, a little across the line at the top. You know, that never really changed through the years, except maybe that 2000 to 2002 where it was pretty much your, you know, ideal or model swing. But even when you see him injured or he'd come back, it would always go a little bit that way because that's the way his body wanted to move. And you think, like, everybody's got that. And you think, Tiger never completely mastered it. Nobody's made the perfect game yet. You know, you've got to swing within your own limitations and find your swing. I think it was you said it a couple of years ago. I remember you had a little, like, cube with your, I think it was your granddad's swing in it. And I remember there was a quote on it. It was like, there's only one swing for you. But that swing's not for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Arnold Palmer famously said, swing your swing, right? Do you feel like people, you know, for everyone listening, I always say, and I've said that a lot this week here in Dubai to the team, you know, not only from an instruction standpoint, but from what we're trying to get players to do is do the obvious things well. The obvious thing that you can control as a golfer, whether you're 25, 15, 10, 5, scratch, handicap, is the way you set up to the golf ball, because all that happens before the golf swing starts. It's hard if you feel the golf swing a little stuck and under coming in on the inside to let go of the golf club mid downswing and stop. If you feel yourself start to come over it in 2 seconds, your golf swing's over. It's hard to let go of the golf club and say, listen, I didn't hit the ball because I felt myself coming off, so I just stopped, right? Tiger was famous for being able to stop his golf swing, right? The average person's got no chance to do that. So if you do the obvious things well in your grip, your posture, your setup, your alignment, and like you said, just work on that for 5-6 months. Just work on the grip being consistent. Work on the posture. Work on the alignment, the ball position. Then you've got a good chance to address some of the other things.
100%. Definitely. And it's sticking to your plan. You know, sticking to the things that you know are going to make you better. And if everybody walked in here with a grip posture setup that was good, I'd probably have a lot less golf lessons. So, you know what I mean? Like, that to me is, and I hammer the guys on it, like, if the grip posture and setup are good, they've got a chance. If any of those are off, it's a domino effect. It's going to throw other things off later on in the swing, and then you're just firefighting. You're just hoping that they find a way to get the club back. And that's the thing that's within your control. So do that really well and get really good at that. And, you know, it's the one thing I noticed with our juniors, like, just looking at them over and over and over again, especially the slightly older ones that we've had for a few years, there's very few of them set up badly. You know, they might get a little off at alignments and things like that, but generally speaking, they all grip it good. They all set up to it good. And it's something that the guys have done a really good job, like, across all of our instructors. You can see that's why you're getting so many good kids. It's not that we're really good at teaching the swing, it's that we're really good at just getting the basics right. They can kind of figure it out after that. You know, they all have enough time and enough skill to figure out the golf swing, but the biggest thing is just making sure that they're in a position from the get-go that they can allow their talent to kind of take over, as opposed to us having to manufacture swings all the time. It's like, right, there you go, go play, go enjoy it. You know, good start point, and you can figure it out and play skillful golf from there.
Let's take a quick break.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
And we are back.
I think a lot of people, I think most people listening to the pod, they know what Dubai is, right? I mean, Dubai is kind of this iconic, you know, skyscraper place in the desert. It's a very much an international destination. I mean, we've all marveled over the last 25 years how much Dubai has grown and changed. And for a lot of people that have never been here, they come here for the first time, and it's literally like they're in a science fiction movie. I mean, and they've just never seen anything like it. So it is a global place. It is a global destination. But from a Gulf standpoint, this is still a very, very, very small Gulf region. There's probably, anywhere between 2 to 3, maybe even 4 million people living here in Dubai. And how many golf courses are there?
Probably about 16 in the UAE.
16 in the UAE. And for those people that don't know, the UAE is the United Arab Emirates. It's made up of different emirates. Dubai is an emirate, very similar to a state in the U.S. Within Dubai, just Dubai itself, how many golf courses are there?
10. Can't be more than that.
Yeah, 10. And the majority of the people in the UAE live in Dubai. So it's a small golf market. I'm really proud of the fact that what we've done is help develop players. There's a wall as you go into our gym facility here at the Academy, here at the Els Club, that it's really cool that you did this. You put our logo in the middle of it and then put the names and the colleges that all the people we went to. How many names are on that, would you say?
There's about 20 or so on it, probably another 7 or 8 to go on it.
So close to 30 kids that have gone and played some form of college golf in America. Rahan Thomas is at Oklahoma State right now. Toby Bishop just went to the University of Florida. You're really, I think, have been at the forefront, in my opinion. I think you're one of the best junior golf developers in the world, really. You've put together this program kind of like a high school golf program here in Dubai, here in the UAE, which, again, outside the United States just doesn't exist. You know, if you played college golf in America, most likely you played high school golf on some team. Talk me through why you wanted to kind of, so we've created this elite junior program, this elite junior team. Across the board currently, our junior program here in Dubai, how many kids from early ages to the late stages? I mean, first of all, we've got kids in our junior program here that start early as?
Oh, 3 years old.
3 years old. So we go from 3 to elite juniors who are in their late teens. How many kids do we currently have enrolled in our junior program from the young to the old?
About 190 at the moment.
190.
Yeah, there's 154 in the junior program, and then give or take, there's probably 30 to 40 in the various different elite programs.
So with that many juniors coming through our doors here, was that the reason why you said, okay, we've got to find a way to create a different or another pathway for the elite player?
Yeah, it's developed. It was an idea that Justin had, and Justin had begun it just before he had left. And it was just quite difficult to get off the ground, mainly because of the schooling side of things. It was trying to get the right school to attach to, and Gem's first point came along, and it was a perfect fit. But it's trying to give them the next little target. So, like, as kids, we found that with our junior program initially, they would get to tournament ready, which is our top one. They could reach that by 14, but then they would just go into individual. And we kind of wanted to keep that team aspect to it. We wanted them to feel like they could be, as you said the other day, like a part of something bigger. And we also seen the value in group stuff, because we get a lot of those kids when they reach that, they're like, right, we want to come for individual instruction 4 times a week. And I would say to the parents, like, no. And they're shocked by it, because they're like, but we want to. I'm like, yeah, but it's useless for your child. It would be much better off if he came once a week to me and he'd practice and play with his friends. And obviously with the limited golf courses here, you also have limited access for the juniors. It's quite difficult sometimes for them to get on and play. So the idea behind the kind of elite programs were basically to bring together players of similar levels. Because we noticed a lot with like Josh Hill, Toby, Arjun, they were almost like a little mini team of three. And as they grew up, they pushed each other. So off the back of that, we were like, okay, there's definitely something in having groups of kids, similar level, create friendships, and also push each other. And push them in the right way. Like I always remember watching them play the Fallow series 1 year, and I think combined they were something like 35 under par, miles ahead of everybody. But like they'd be playing against each other, and one of the balls would be going towards the water. The other two would be shouting sit, because they didn't want to win by them messing up. They wanted to win by them making birdies and beating the other guy. And like that always just, that memory of them stood out. And to me, that was the driving force. It was like trying to finish a project that JP had started, trying to get more of those groups together that would really bring each other on. Because like, okay, coaches can help, but actually it's much more about the environment that helps them develop. Because really, if we weren't here and they created that environment themselves, the chances are they would still get really good. So all we're doing is trying to basically ramp that up and go, right, well, if we can give good coaching plus that environment, they're going to get better quicker and we're going to get more. And for me, like last week, I said to the team last Sunday, it was just when you arrived, I was like, to me, this is the most proud day I've had in 9 years. And the reason was we had 54 juniors
competing. Hey, you posted that on your Instagram account.
54 juniors competing across three different events. It was a par three event, a junior open, and a men's open. And there was 54 kids from the academy. I'm like, that is a huge number from an academy to be competing in three events across the UAE.
The other thing I think for people listening is in the developing, in the outside the United States, maybe outside the UK and stuff, a market like Dubai is a developing golf market, right? There isn't the AJGA, right? There is some U.S. kids, but for the majority of the people, listening to this podcast that come from the U.S., it's normal for your kids to, in Florida where I live, there's the Hurricane Tour, there's the IJGT, there's, AJGA, there's five different junior tours that your kids can play on. Here in a region like Dubai, there's none of that. There's no organized junior golf development tour like the AJGA, like there are all around the United States. So the kids have to play in a lot of tournaments where they're playing not against their peers, not against kids their own age. They're playing against in tournaments at country clubs, at golf courses with adults. And so I think what I love when I come here and I get so many different ideas and ways of thinking about things is I see you developing so many more real world type drills and skills and stuff. Talk to me about how you come up and give me some examples of, for the people listening, of an example of, okay, so you've got a junior class and this is our elite program here. These are all good players. These players all say they want to try and play competitively at some level. They all want to hopefully go play Division I college golf in America. Some of them have aspirations to play professional golf. But typical class, what are you trying to get the groups to do? Because in the group lessons, they're not doing instruction. They're doing playing and testing. Talk me through that.
I think, what we're trying to do is just recreate playing scenarios. We're also trying to challenge them mentally. Like, we're trying to create situations where they're going to fail. Because at the end of the day, like, I think it's very easy to just be that kind of parent who wraps them in bubble wrap and never lets them fail. And then all of a sudden they end up, at some point in their life or in their golfing career and they fail and they don't know what to do. So I suppose for us, we're always trying to make them challenged and failed at different points in time. And we want them to kind of think of a lot of their sessions as play. It's the opportunity to try things. It's the opportunity to compete. It's teaming up with different people all the time. And like examples would be, the other day we had a real simple one. We had every time they had to go back to a drive, so they would alternate drive and a short game shot in a pair of two. So you'd have to hit one out of two on the fairway, and then they would have to do...
And what I like about this is also, here in Dubai and the UAE, and I think all over the world, it's hard to get juniors on the golf course. Right? That is a constant theme that everybody that is involved with junior golf, for all the parents listening, unless you are a very, very wealthy person that lives in the United States and your child can go to a country club and they're going to have access to the golf, to a golf course. But there are so many people listening to this podcast who have, who are either a junior golfer, a competitive golfer, that can look back at their career and say, yeah, I didn't have access to a golf course. And so I think one of the things that I love about what you do and what we're trying to do here is we're trying to create a competitive golf course situation, but unfortunately, they're not on the golf course.
Yes, exactly. So like we have to do the best with what we have. So if there's weeks where we can't get on the golf course, we will straight away go towards skill testing and having some fun with them doing that. And again, making them see practice as play. The worst thing for them is standing on a range for 4.5 hours hitting golf ball after golf ball, and then they go on the golf course and they have no idea how to actually hit shots. So we're always trying to recreate the environment when we can't access the golf course. And then if we have any kind of time to get on the golf course, we'll just bring them straight out and we'll do different things with them on the golf course wherever possible, because ultimately that's what we have to do. It's play. It's actually how do you get the ball from A to B in the lowest amount of strokes. And it's interesting seeing the kids, because you have certain ones who are really polished and look great in the range and they can't go and score. And then you have other ones who look very average. They don't look great in certain tests and things, but then they really are good at putting it together. And I think that's the interesting thing. It's how do you develop them to play better, faster, not necessarily just swing the golf club really nice. And like all of our training sessions, like we'll sit in the office, the whole team, and we'll just throw around ideas and we'll try them. And you know, sometimes they're really hard and they're way too hard and we'll have to make a last minute adjustment, and sometimes they're way too easy and again we'll have to adjust. But it's like, I suppose the thing that I love about our team as well is that we're all willing to throw our two cents in and talk about it and debate it. And even the other day when you did the speed test, like you said, it's like, I wasn't sure that was going to work, but it worked really well, so let's do that more often. And it's that willingness for us to try things and also for the kids to try things. And sometimes they'll put their hands up and go, oh, it's terrible. And they'll go and work on that. And you'll see them actually around the recreating those games sometimes. So if they get one they really like you'll see them and you'll watch them from afar just in their own practice time. And they'll be moving around the school and you're like, oh, they've just copied that game. And that's where you put a big star on it. It's like, okay, do this one again. You know, because they like that. We've even tried to extend that into just normal clients. We started to do something called the training plan. So 3 times a week, anybody single figure or better can come along to this class, and it's done exactly the same way. So it's done as a competitive practice, and it could include one part of the game, it could include every part of the game, you just don't know. And we'll come up with it on the morning of, and we'll come up with some sort of challenge, and they've got to compete against each other. And again, it's trying to introduce play to instruction rather than just teaching them how to swing a golf club.
So let's take a short break and we will be back right after this.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
All right, let's get back to the interview. So this is the part of the podcast where people are going to get, you know, some stuff for free, okay? So I want you to give everyone listening a putting game that they could play, right? They could add a range at their home, one for short game, one for irons, one for drivers. Come on, give me a good putting game that everybody listening could take out and say, okay, you could this is kind of the blueprint. Do this one.
I think probably the most valuable one that I use is that, you know, putting wise, is actually stolen from your friend Cameron McCormick. And really simple, you mark a starting point inside about 15 feet. You take two tees and you basically make a gate in the middle of the line, just a bit bigger than a putter head apart. And then you make a semicircle of tees behind the hole, about a foot and a half.
Yeah, that's safe zone.
Yeah, So you've got 3 points available. You've got a point if you get it through the gate. You've got a point if you get the speed right. And then the final point if you hold it.
I mean, I think you have learned, and I think it's also important to say this. This is something that my dad says all the time, and I think you've been a great adopter at this. My dad always says in seminars, you know, when he gives instruction, you know, I think my dad's the best golf instructor in the world. He's on the Mount Rushmore, in my opinion, of golf instruction. But he always says in seminars, I have invented nothing in golf instruction. And there are golf instructors out there that love to try and act like they've created something and it's something new and it's theirs alone and they're really secretive about it and they're not going to tell you all about it. But you've been you're looking at all of these different things that you can do from other instructors. And then, you know, Cam, who you and I have a tremendous amount of respect for, Cam is big on, and I've had him on the podcast before, Cam is big on testing and stuff like that. So you're trying to get them to feel these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think it's always a balance. You know, you're always, you know, in my head, I've always balanced probably between, you know, things like that I love to try and play with. Like, I've always loved skill development. I've always really enjoyed that, like, looking at Cam, Corey, a friend of mine, Ed Coughlin, back in Ireland. You know, that side really interests me because, like, a lot of that is very applicable. But then also, like, when I look at Justin teaching, like, he's so good at getting the technical side right quickly and in a very easy manner. It's always, like, it's a bit of a game, right? And even with certain players are going to need more of one and work better with more of one, and certain players are more of another. And it's trying to get that balance between good technique, good method, but also getting into, like, okay, well, how applicable is this? Can you hit that shot? And I always remember you with Toby a couple of years ago. It was the first time you had met him. And he had said he wanted to play college golf and he wanted to be a PGA Tour player. And you just said to him, right, hit 10 shots the same shape. And you stood for an hour and just said no to him. And I've never seen that boy as quiet in my life. But, like, that hit a chord because every single day for the next month, he stood there just doing that one drill. And he just wanted to hit 10 shots in a row the same shape. And then he started coming up with his own way of doing it. And he'd, like, add in targets and add in tightness and had to be within a certain range. And, like, I love that because that's really applicable. And all he kept doing was, like, one shape, one shape, one shape. And it's, yeah, we steal everything. Like, and it, because people have figured out better ways of doing it. Like, I can't actually think of anything really that I haven't stolen from somebody. And it's just this huge mixing pot of people that I've met. Like, obviously, I would say a lot of it comes from Justin, you and your dad, because they're the three biggest influences I've had. And then, like, you branch off and you go, well, you know, the people you've introduced me to, like guys like Cameron, you know, I love looking at his stuff in Altus and I love looking at what they do. And I'll take some of it and go, do you know what, I really like that. And there's other stuff that I'll take and go, do you know what, I really don't like that. And you kind of have to filter it because there's just so much information, like, to everybody, to instructors, to players. Like, you have to be able to filter it. And some people will be better at filtering it than others. And it's trying to take, you know, new stuff and go, right, can I take one thing from it? Don't need it all. Just, like, is there one thing there that could help me do something a little better? I think if you can do that, you get better as an instructor and you probably get better as a player too.
So the drill putting 15 feet, and where do you put the gate?
So the gate's halfway. It's just a bit bigger than a putter length. So the idea would be if you pictured, like, a pro tracer line that kind of goes along the ground, the goal is that the gate is in the middle of the line that you see. So if it's a left or right putt and you've read a foot of break, you're a foot left of the hole, the ball should pass through the gate for a point, at good speed for another point, and if it's both are perfect, the ball will go in the hole and you've got three. So you hit five putts from the tee, through the gate, into the hole, hopefully, and then you move the putt. So there's 15 points available each time. And it's great because it helps you identify, is your speed good, is your read good, or is your start line good? And hopefully it's all three, but if you then see a problem at one, you have an area to focus on.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that a lot of players do is they practice their technique. It's something that everybody who listens to the pod knows that I'm a big, this balance of technique versus execution. And executing what you're doing, I like what you do with all of these games, and just because it's, you're working on something, you're working on the technical aspect of something, then you're testing it. Right? Most people think the test is going to play the golf course. You and I have talked for years. You've got to test it before you take it to the course to see if anything you're working on is actually working. And these games that you go through, actually this one where you've got three different checkpoints, you get a point for this, you get a point for this, you'll probably maybe be good at one, maybe two of them, but you'll be bad at another. So it allows you as the player to say, okay, I've just did this little game, this little test, this little skill development thing. Okay, I'm pretty good at this. I'm pretty good. I just need to go practice that part of it. All right, give me a short game one.
Short game one, bad ball. Two balls, play the worst ball each time until you finish the ball off. So you hit two chips, whichever one's furthest from the hole, you hit two putts from there. If you hole both of them, job done. If you miss one, play two putts from there. Proper pressure, that one. That's hard as well. Like you do that in any kind of difficult scenario, just worst ball each time and do that one, it's good.
Give me a full swing game test that everyone listening can do on their own driving range without any sort of other, that's the great thing about this. If you have a putting green, if you have a short game area, if you have a driving range, even if you don't have a great short game area, you can go somewhere on the driving range and try and make one up yourself. But give me a full swing game that you like to see players try.
I always like the cheap man's track, man. Okay. Which is an alignment stick on your ball to target line, just pointed straight up.
How many steps out?
So probably about four or five steps out. So you have to basically hit a shape around it. So if you're a fader, you've got to start at left, curve at right, and can't miss over the right side of the ball to target line. Draw the opposite. So you hit 10 balls or 20 balls. How many shots can you successfully hit with the correct starting line and the correct curve? Really simple.
Just start lines.
Start line. Can you start it online? Can you hit the right shape? And then if you get really good at that and you start to get a high number, you can add in a finish. So you can say, okay, it's got to finish within 10 yards of the target. It's got to finish on this side. And you can add levels to that. You can then start to say, okay, every alternating shot, there's trouble more one side than another one. So one might be there's trouble right, one might be there's trouble left. But you can add levels. But to be honest, most people don't get past stage one. Can you start the ball online and can you curve it the right way?
And we talk all the time, and that's one of the things that I do when I come over and spend time with the team, that I think the instructors, the young instructors that we're lucky enough to have on our team here, like you said, they're surprised that, if you're trying to play and if you say you want to play competitively as a junior golfer and as an amateur golfer, to me, if you're telling me you're going to want to hit a draw, if you're telling me you're going to want to hit a fade, if you're telling me you want to hit a draw, the ball sure as hell needs to start right of your target. If you're telling me you want to hit a fade, you sure as hell better be able to start the golf ball consistently left of your target. What it does after that is that's the next phase. But I think so many players are obsessed, and you and I have talked about this, I think so many golfers are obsessed with where the golf ball is ending up from a full swing standpoint, as opposed to where the golf ball is starting relative to the shot they're trying to actively hit.
Yeah. And I think it amazes me even more when I get these random videos from students and they're like, oh, what do you think of the swing? I'm like, well, where did the ball go? Because I have no information on this swing whatsoever other than how pretty it looks.
Yeah.
So it's like, was it a push slice? Was it a pull hook? Was it a fade? Was it a draw? Because, the thing is, if they understood that, they'd probably be able to fix it most of the time themselves. But all I'm going to comment on is, oh, the face looks shut. But he might have hit, a massive open face slice at impact. I can't tell anything other than seeing the first couple of feet of the ball. So, understanding start line and the direction the ball is moving, it helps you figure out your own swing. You know what I mean? And if you can practice that and understand that, it makes my job a hell of a lot easier. Because all of a sudden, when I ask you, how did you hit out the weekend? Well, do you know what? I started everything left and it just kind of stayed there. I'm like straight away, oh, it's a pull. I need to get the face a bit more open. You know what I mean? Like it helps me direct my coaching better. But if somebody comes in and goes, oh, I hit it right. Okay, well, was it starting right? Was it curving right? Was it a push right? Like what was the shot? So it definitely gets people more zoned into hitting a shot and also being able to describe a shot back and understand those shots. And I think that's really key.
You mentioned when someone shows you a picture or a video of their golf swing, like you said, you don't know where the golf ball goes, right? And we see so many junior golfers who spend an enormous amount of time looking at their own golf swing and looking at other golf swings. Tommy Fleetwood, yeah, we all love Tommy, right? Tommy's the best, right? We love him. He's moved out here to Dubai. This is where he's going to make his home. His two boys are in our junior program here. And you've basically put them on notice that they're not allowed to video or look at their golf swings, because that's all they tend to do, because that's the world they live in, right? They're around a guy like Tommy. They're looking at it all the time. And you've said, listen, enough. We're not looking at the golf swing now. How important do you think that is in 20? Because everybody's got a smartphone. Everybody's got, you know, the majority of the junior golfers that we teach all have the alignment rod holder where they can put the phone up and they're looking at their golf swing. They're looking at their golf swing. They're looking at their golf swing. And that's something I always say. What are you looking for? Are you looking at your golf swing for something specific? Because if you are, fine. But if you're trying to look at your golf swing constantly, you've got to remember that there are so many body parts, all of these things happening in a dynamic movement pattern that's over in a second and a half to 2 seconds. And trying to figure that puzzle out, sometimes you can look at video so much that you just, nothing actually changes.
Yeah. Well, I learned the lesson with Toby. I always remember it was November 2017, and I'll never forget it. I remember looking at the video of his swing on camera, and it just looked perfect. Like, we had the left wrist perfect, face was perfect. It looked like it was almost a copy of where Tiger would have it.
Tiger 2000.
And we were loving this swing, and he hit the ball everywhere. And I remember looking at it, and I remember he went and played a tournament, and he had the worst stretch of tournaments I've ever seen him play. Ball was going everywhere, swing looked amazing, and I was like, this is just wrong. At the time, I didn't know what it was. Didn't know why it was wrong, couldn't tell you. I said to him, right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to not look at video for a month. I said, me and you, we're not going to look at it. We're not allowed to look at the swing at all. We're going to look at the ball. And we're only going to look at the ball. And we're going to see what happens after a month. We're going to try and make a shot. And I remember we took a month, no video, either of us. I wasn't allowed to record a swing. He wasn't allowed to look at it. And we focused on ball flight, ball flight, ball flight. And then at the end of the month, we went back and looked at what the swing was, because he started playing really, really good. And I'm like, right, whatever.
Did it look different?
Completely. Completely. I remember it got really short. His left wrist got very bowed. The face was very shut. And I remember saying to him at that point, I'm like, right, the one thing we now know is with your swing, it's not going to look traditional. It's always going to have to be shut at the top. And we use that for the next 5 years. So anytime his face started to get open, you would see the ball starting to go everywhere. As soon as he did that, the first thing we would change, regardless what the rest of the swing looked like, we'd start to get a bit more closed at the top. And it always worked.
Yeah, now
it took us finding that model. It took us like going, right, we've done something wrong here. And I had to put my hands up and go, I've done something wrong here. Like, I've told you to do all this, and it clearly has not worked. Because he was shooting like 85.
But it looked good.
It looked perfect. I've still got the swing. I've kept that video as a reminder, do not go for a model. And yeah, we just used that as like our theme for the next 5 years, and that was it.
And now, Toby Bishop, that was 5 years ago. Toby's now a freshman at the University of Florida, playing for Coach JC Deacon. JC's been on the podcast. Jamie, if people want to see what you're doing social-wise, see what the academy's doing, where can they check that out?
They can check out, probably Instagram's the best bet. Just CH3 Performance Golf is our Instagram, and then JM Golf Coach is mine, and you'll find most of the stuff there, really.
Lastly, I am absolutely shocked at the... even though it's a podcast, a lot of people can't see this. The body transformation you've made from a pound standpoint, in pounds. I know you work in kilos. In the last 2 years, how much weight have you lost?
If my maths is correct, it's about 70 pounds since I came to Dubai.
So when you got in Dubai, from the day you arrived to today, you've lost, in the last 2 years, you've lost well over 50 pounds.
Yeah. It was 30 kilos, so it's about 60 to 70 pounds, give or take.
You're doing triathlons now. You're about to run a marathon. What was the crazy one that you just did?
I just did half Ironman in Greece. So that was...
No, the other one, the 30.
Into the Dark. Yeah. We do this thing, our gym does this thing every year called Into the Dark. 50K bike, 50K run, 50K bike, and we go through the night. So you start at 7 p.m. and then everybody tries to finish it before light. So we did that this year as well, which was a good.
What was the impetus? Because again, we ask our, as instructors, we're asking our students to better themselves. What was the impetus for you to try and say, listen, you know, I mean, you're half the person you used to be, right? What was the catalyst personally for you that said, okay, something needs to change for me?
I think I knew, you know, when I came to Feridian with you, you gave me some very, very harsh but honest words. I think people can take it in two ways. They can take it either as an insult or they can take it as somebody trying to help you. And I took it as that. And it took me a while to figure out how, but I was, from that moment on, trying so hard to lose weight. And then I was lucky enough to come across
it. It wasn't so much, you know, from to where I'm trying to body shame you, but I think one of the things that I was trying to impress upon you is, listen, you're working with so many, you know, juniors, you're mentoring so many junior golfers, and we're asking them to do so many things and change things. And I could see you, you know, you said, hey, I want to come and work out. Listen, for everybody listening, I am by no means an athlete, right? But, you know, fitness. But I feel like it's my job that if I'm going to ask my golfers and the athletes that we work with to get in the gym, bust their ass, and get in better shape, that's on me too. I have to do that too.
Absolutely. And that to me was like life-changing, like in the best possible way, because as much as some people might see it as harsh, to me it was, you were the first person that was honest enough to say it. You know, other people knew I was heavy, but like nobody said it, and that was the moment that
I could just see that, you know, you'd struggle, you'd get tired,
all the time.
Yeah, you were tired. Yeah.
And then, you know, over the course of a couple of years, I'd lost some pounds, and then about 2.5-3 years ago, I came across a gym close to us called Inner Fight, and a really good coach called Jess, and she's just kind of stuck with me along the way and just helped me kick on to some crazy things that I never thought would be possible. So yeah, to me it's just I was lucky enough to have somebody willing to be honest and then somebody to help me out along the way, and it's been a fun couple of years.
Well, as I said to you at the beginning of the podcast, you are one of the instructors around the world and around the globe that largely go unnoticed, but in my opinion, you're one of the best golf instructors in the world, and I'm very proud that you run the academy here. And you know, you and Justin Parsons, you know, you guys are like brothers to me, and you're adopted members of the Harmon family, and I'm incredibly proud of all the work that you've done, and not only the person you've become, but the instructor you become. Because let me tell you, if I'm going into battle, if I've got an instruction team and somebody says, listen, you can hire a couple of people to be on your instruction team, you know, you and JP are at the top of my list, because I want you guys on my team, and I appreciate everything you do for us.
Thank you very much.
So that was a deep dive into instruction with Jamie McConnell, and hopefully everybody will give him a follow and take a look at what he's doing, because he is doing some really, really cool stuff. And like I said, if I've got to pick someone for to go to battle with from an instruction standpoint, he is top of the list. So I spent last week at my academy out in Dubai. I go once a year, and Jamie and I kind of talked a little bit about it, but it is a really unique kind of, it's obviously one of the really great cities of the world. I think it's becoming an iconic city with, you know, the landscape of what they've done there. And but it is a very, very small golf market. So whenever I get a chance to go over and spend time there, I'm always spending time with a lot of different people taking golf lessons. My schedule when I go to Dubai is pretty packed with giving golf lessons, and it's interesting. I get to give golf lessons from people from all over the world. I think last week the nationalities, I gave a lot of golf lessons to people from India, Pakistan, Asia, Russia, South Africa, Northern Europeans, a lot of people from the UK. So it's always interesting to kind of work with people. When you live in the US, the predominant amount of golf lessons you give are to people from the US. They're Americans. And I always think it's interesting
how people, they very, very much learn differently. I mean, I think the way that people from different countries approach instruction, approach getting a golf lesson is very, very different. And I think that's one of the cool things about what I get to do is I get to meet a lot of different people and get to spend time with people from, you know, different walks of life. But last week, I spent a lot of time with our juniors in our junior development program. And you know, when you are dealing with a bunch of juniors and kids who are coming into golf, and they're not coming into it from kind of the way that I think a lot of people listening in the U.S., the traditional way, I touched on that a little bit. The junior golf, one of the reasons why we've leaned heavily into junior golf development at our academy in Dubai is to try and give kids a pathway. In the U.S., it's easy, right? There's junior tournaments everywhere. There isn't probably anyone listening in any state in the U.S. That doesn't have a place where you could go and put your children into a junior development program. You could put them in junior tournaments. But out in Dubai, it's very, very limited on the amount of things that the juniors can play in together with their peers. They tend to play a lot of golf with adults. And so what we wanted to try and do was really kind of immerse a lot of the kids that we have in our junior program into kind of this team concept to make them feel like they're part of like a high school team. I talked a little bit about that with Jamie. And when we think about, when I think about, people ask me, you know, the topic of growing the game. I mean, to me, as an instructor, I feel like I am trying to grow the game by bringing in junior golfers. I think everybody that is a golf instructor around the world, it's a huge opportunity. It's a responsibility, I think, to bring in junior golfers, to get them introduced to golf, and instill all of the kind of the values. You also have to remember that a lot of people from developing countries that don't have a huge amount of history in golf, they don't know a lot of the traditions and the history of the game. And I that's one of the things I really, really like is getting an opportunity to talk to people about, you know, the history of golf and you know, all the things that came before them. And you'd be surprised because of just where a lot of kids live that, you know, aren't immersed in a lot of the history and the legacy of golf, they just don't know a lot of those things. So I think it's always a unique opportunity for me to get an opportunity to kind of fly the flag for golf and golf instruction. So it was a really cool week, and it's a week that I always really look forward to. Want to thank everyone for listening, and we will continue to do what the podcast does. Bring you guests that maybe give you hot takes, maybe guests that you didn't know, but just try and continue to get people on that love golf and are passionate, and golf is part of their life. Son of a Butch comes to you every Wednesday. We will see you all next week.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
You wouldn't expect to hear that we're America's third best city for beer like this one. Or home to vibes like this. And this. It might surprise you that we're top 10 for immersive art that's like,
whoa.
And?
Hmm.
Not to mention, we have one of the top zoos in the country. So can a city with the country's best pro soccer team, ranking as a top culinary destination in the world, be in your own backyard? Yes, Columbus. Plan your summer at experiencecolumbus.com/summer.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.